Alrighty then, that is my best Jim Carrey. Let's get ready to rumble on what? The 0 hour podcast. I'm making it serious today, apparently. The podcast.
You're sounding European.
Yeah, I'm so European, eh?
Yes.
So, if you don't recognize his voice, it is Mark Fitz, the co-host. And to my right is the lovely Miss
Christine Chapman, your host.
What up? And who do we have on the phone? Please introduce yourself, Alana.
Hello, my name is Alana. I am very happy to be on the show today and get to talk to both of you.
Amazing. Alana, welcome. Remind us the location. Are you here in the Commonwealth or are you elsewhere?
Yep, I'm in Massachusetts. I have lived in Westford my entire life.
Wow.
Oh, is that a nice area? I don't know the state.
It's a little bit north of us, I think.
Okay.
Yep, north up 495.
Yep.
Okay. Today's subject matter is important, right? It is something that I think lots of people kind of have to deal with. I am dealing with it with my mother, right, and her husband. And we're going to talk a little bit about something that is near and dear to Alana, and her family. And, it's the subject of Alzheimer's, right? I'll be honest with you. I have only been recently, introduced to it because of a personal situation, with my mom and her husband. But, Alana, tell the audience what it is you do for Alzheimer's, and we'll start there.
Okay. Well, wait. I need to back this up a little bit because
sorry.
Alana is a different guest for us in that usually, or up until now, there has always been like a tie, whether it's a friend of Mark's or a friend of Christine's.
Oh.
And Alana, you are certainly a friend of the 0 hour, but we've never met and we don't have history. And I wanted to just sort of...
You have listened to the episode, so you know the antics.
Yes.
The antics.
Yes.
All right.
But Alana, you came to us as a result of Megan reaching out from 48 Peaks. And I think that is a good place to start because we're still so like, we're still so surprised when people reach out and say, hey, I see you have a podcast and I'd love to potentially see if we could talk about having, you know, one of our people speak to you and share their story.
When you have an important message
to
share.
Yes.
So, you know, our buddy Dave Bowler is very involved in the cure and the cause and the recognition of.
Yes.
But maybe instead of you and I just yucking it up,
we should
let Alana
I'm sorry,
better
Alana.
Introduce herself. God, what kind of friend are you?
I know. I'm so sorry.
Jeez.
Welcome, Alana.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to be here. And also a big thanks to Megan. She is the event manager. She works for the Alzheimer's Association and leads the 48 Peaks Alzheimer's fundraising event. I am a volunteer. I'm actually a little bit newer to the event. I've only participated the last 2 years, but it's been ongoing since 2013, so over a decade, and it's a really wonderful community. They've been so welcoming and opened their arms to me as someone who is, trying to navigate being a caregiver for Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
My mom has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's about 10 years ago as well, and she has early onset, so she was diagnosed in her 50s, and now she's in her mid-60s.
All right, wait, hang on, Alana. Let's pause there. All right, you've kind of set the framework. Can you explain to me and to the audience 48 Peaks, right?
Yes,
absolutely.
What does that entail? I have a general sense because I did some homework today, but could you share a little bit more about 48 Peaks and if there's a website where people go to, like, how do they get in touch?
Yeah, absolutely. So to learn all about it, you can go to alls.org/48peaks. We okay. also have social media. So on Instagram, 48peaksalls, as well as Facebook pages. And what 48 Peaks is it is an event that is part of the Longest Day. And the Longest Day is the signature event for the Alzheimer's Association. It happens nationally, and it allows participants to pick an activity and a date to do a fundraising event. And it gives participants a ton of freedom. Some people will do a race. Some people will do a bike ride. Folks will host a yoga class. Some might host a golf tournament. And 48 Peaks is started in 2013 with one of the volunteers choosing to do a hike. In honor of his wife, who was diagnosed with younger onset Alzheimer's. And so he recruited some friends and some family and decided to go for a hike up in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And where 48 Peaks comes from is there are 48 summits in New Hampshire that are above 4,000 feet.
Yeah.
Really?
One of the most notable being Mount Washington, mm-hmm. But there are 48 others.
It's like the presidents, right? Don't they call the mountain range yep. like the presidents or something like that?
Yeah, all those presidents are in there. There's Jackson and Pierce and Adams, and you could just start rattling
wow.
off some presidents, and they likely have a peak up there.
That's awesome.
Just a sidebar, have you hiked all 48, or are there others in the group who have hiked all 48?
There are many hikers in our group that have accomplished 48.
Wow.
Being newer, it is an ambitious goal of mine. I would love to one day say that I've hiked all 48. Right now, I'm kind of on the lower end, but we're okay. Maybe I'll get to 5 or 10 this year. That would be
nice.
Very ambitious for
nice.
Me.
All right. So what I wanted to unpack a little bit, you know, you're talking about your mom. You're talking about early onset. And when we did our little bit of a prep, early onset isn't common or is less common because she was 50, right? And in my family's example, my mother's husband is 82, right? 85, something like that. And, you know, I think it's probably more common. And I heard, I don't know. You know, someone could fact check this, but I heard as a male, if you're a male and you live to a ripe old age of 185, 90, whatever that is, you will get some form of cancer, dementia, or Alzheimer's. Like, is that true, or am I just spewing BS?
I think you have a very good chance of that being true, which is also very scary. Alzheimer's impacts over 6 million people in the U.S., and that number just continues to grow exponentially as our population is aging. But Alzheimer's is also just not a normal process of aging. I think sometimes when you hear the disease, especially if you're not as familiar, it might just kind of be someone's grandfather, grandmother, or great-grandmother that had it, and, you know, as it commonly was joked about, being old-timer's disease.
Yes.
And so that's kind of where a lot of people first kind of hear about it.
Yeah.
But with hitting over 6 million people, it can touch almost everyone in some form or another. Younger onset is definitely not as common, but we are seeing that number grow as well.
Alana, is it nature versus nurture? Meaning, are we seeing these numbers elevated because people don't have access to quality food, quality air, diet, stuff like that? Or is it genetic? Is it from birth? Or can you pick it up like, you know, like I suggested earlier, you're not taking care of your body from a nutrition perspective?
Yeah, there is tons of research trying to identify what is the cause.
And there is no cause truly identified yet, or are there multiple causes that people think contribute?
Yeah, it's very likely that there are multiple factors that are impacting it.
Okay.
One definitely being a genetic component. There's also the environmental component, and lifestyle factors. There has been lots of links between, you know, diet and nutrition and sleep as great ways to prevent the disease.
What about stress?
Stress is definitely an area of
Stress will mess you up everywhere. So, it's interesting. We had an episode, or I recently got interested in something called blue zones, right? Blue zones are, maybe I'm saying it wrong, blue zones are areas in the world where the aging population is super healthy because of what they eat in their environment. And I haven't done enough research in blue zones to understand what the ALZ percentages are, right? But, you know, we're talking about environmental factors. You would think at 6 million, which is, you know, fractional of a very large U.S. population, 360 million, that there would be some profound research, right, at a federal level to identify and look for ways to environmentally take care of citizens. Is that something that the federal government is looking into or has, or what's the scope there?
Yeah, there's hundreds of millions of dollars being poured into research, definitely coming from federal sources. But then there's also a lot of work that the Alzheimer's Association does in fundraising that is being, you know, poured into research and really trying to kind of identify what are effective treatments. There's been a lot of clinical studies and trials with a variety of different medications. And they've started to see some success in kind of slowing the progression of the disease, especially in those early years. My mom, although she didn't participate in clinical trials, I do think she benefited from having some of those medications that kind of have allowed her to have a little bit longer sense of quality of life and normalcy. There's, you know, many factors and the cause of the disease, and there isn't a cure yet. But one day we hope that there will be with all of this effort and research being poured into it.
What's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's? So my relationship with my father, who's now deceased, is distant, right? And I know he was sick and he was in a home. And I understand he had dementia, but I don't know whether it morphed into something that looks like Alzheimer's. So if, you know, from a layman perspective, like, how can you explain to the audience? I'm gonna load up this question, like, it, what the difference is. And I think what I'm interested in and what others would be like, early warning signs. Because, listen, I'm in my 50s and sometimes I forget shit. And I'm like, oh, shit, I just had a senior moment, right? And I'm not that old, and I'm virile, and I run, and I do all these things. But I know it's a kind of a loaded question. We can unpack it piece by piece. But I guess the first is the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's, and how do we know whether we got it, or what do we look for in ourselves and other people?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Yes. I think that's one of the first things that I ended up learning about kind of understanding dementia and Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Dementia is really an umbrella term that describes the symptoms of Alzheimer's. And so it could be that memory loss, confusion, you know, cognitive difficulties to complete daily tasks.
I have all those
dementia
things.
Dementia can be...
I have confusion. I do have confusion, and I have stress.
And you have memory loss sometimes.
What?
Exactly.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, no, absolutely. So dementia is an umbrella term. And Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. And there are many different types of dementia. Alzheimer's is one of the more common types, but there are many others. I'm not as well versed in those, but there's different areas of the brain that are impacted a little bit differently due to different dementias.
So is there a way to get ahead of it? And are you, when you have Alzheimer's, are you medicated? I mean, like I want to learn more about your personal journey and like, early onset is more rare than, you know, advanced aging. And then, you know, like, I don't, is it like, All right. So when my grandmother died, she died literally of old age, right? Which is how I want to go. Her body went out, but her brain and her mind were perfectly clear. When you have Alzheimer's, is it kind of the opposite? Your mind goes before your body goes, and then the body just follows, and you lose functions. And like, what are some of the steps or maybe warning signs that you experience or others who are listening, you know, could be like, oh, shit, okay, that's interesting. I've kind of experienced that with someone or myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important to be aware of some of the warning signs. On the Alzheimer's website, alzheimers.org, they have a list of 10 warning signs. And there is a distinction with kind of having that, you know, general, you know, healthy aging lapse in memory or a healthy aging, you know, confusion, things
versus what would
going
be
going on,
yep,
versus something that feels abnormal. And I'd really encourage if someone feels like they might be sensing in themselves or a loved one that these symptoms are a little bit out of the normal progression and these warning signs feel like they're speaking to them, to really talk to their doctor. That would be definitely the first place to start. And kind of getting more the clinical guidelines from someone that, you know, has, you know, a medical degree and background to diagnose or help get them on the right track.
Too. So I learned something because my mom's husband, his name is Bill. Something very common is called sundowning, right? So literally, when the sun goes down, paranoia goes up, right? And she's telling me stories of him, you know, being paranoid that someone's trying to break into the house, right? That he's hiding stuff to protect his wife, my mom, and himself. He'll have like a screwdriver under the pillow, right? And like he'll wake up in the middle of the night, like checking the windows, and he'll call the police, right? And they live in Century Village in Boca, and the police are experienced dealing with this, right? And they have to come to the house because it's their job, even though they've been here before, they know what the situation is. And my mom would talk to the police, and she's a friendly woman, and she would whisper to the cop, you know, he's got Alzheimer's or dementia or whatever. And the cop would be like, yeah, so does my mom or so does my dad. So we actually know how we're trained to handle this. Alana, outside of medical staff, right, are people trained, are first responders trained to...
And caregivers,
yes.
Like in the home, like, did you have to learn how to be a good caregiver?
Yeah, there is most police departments or fire departments or first responder paramedics have some training. They definitely check with a, you know, local department if you want to get your loved one kind of registered on their radar of, you know, having this disease, so that, you know, when those situations come up, that they kind of have a little bit of a
context,
a heads up. Yeah.
Yep,
and,
yep.
And they can, you know, use that training that they have. And you spoke to sundowners and that those symptoms of kind of paranoia, symptoms of trying to hide things, or symptoms of, you know, being kind of thrown off when, you know, the days are changing or time,
yep,
is changing. Also very common symptoms. Definitely experienced that with my mom. She had some really strong bouts of paranoia and having to kind of learn as a caregiver that some of the things that she was saying, sometimes they present themselves as hallucinations. Sometimes she was seeing, you know, someone outside or a dog running around or something. Really trying to learn these as a caregiver and learn how to redirect or how to kind of engage them in a different task when that sundowning time is happening, and really, you know, mitigate those. There is, you know, some treatments, some kind of like calming medication that's available. Some people it presents as really strong anxiety. Some people it presents as really strong depression. And so sometimes there's a little bit of a crossover in some of those treatments. one thing about Alzheimer's is that every person is different as well. And so it does make sometimes that
the diagnosis hard.
Yeah, it definitely makes diagnosis hard. It also makes learning how to caregive and meet someone's needs and respond challenging, because there's not one size fits all when it comes to trying to help someone.
All right, so all joking aside, I probably have like three of those symptoms, like anxiety, right, and hearing shit, right, and seeing some shit. But let me ask this question. So you're a young caregiver. You're a young woman. My mom is 80, right, and she's trying to figure this out. What do caregivers who are older, right, I'm amazed by my mom, because she, when I talk to her about it, she's being completely cool and calm, right? And I know she's probably freaking out some days, like inside. But how do you teach an 80-year-old, the caregiver, the spouse, the person, like, you know, you're 80. Like, shit, I got to deal with this now? You know, you're in your, you know, your sunsetting years, right? Like, how stressful is that for the spouse?
Okay, but regardless of whether it's a spouse or it's a daughter or a son, Alana, this was a great segue so that I could follow up and say, can you speak to that shared experience, like that experience that is yours? Can you share your experience of, oh my God, like, I'm, you know, on some level, you lose your mom, right?
Yeah.
Or so you have to evolve your relationship with your mom while becoming more of the caregiver, probably earlier than you imagined, right?
Yeah, caregiving faces a lot of challenges, whether you're someone in your 20s like me, where you feel like you kind of flipped from being child to almost a parent role, or if you're, you know, 80 and trying to kind of navigate the healthcare system or what is happening, you know, with some of these complex changes and kind of that. And so the Alzheimer's Association has tons of caregiver support resources. I would maybe recommend towards someone that's older. They have a 24/7 helpline where you could call with almost any question. And the staff, they are master level trained, very knowledgeable, and could provide some of that support over the phone in kind of any situation. But if you're someone that's younger, in, you know, my shoes, I found a lot of really great resources on social media, and using, you know, Instagram and TikTok, and kind of finding someone else that, you know, kind of fits a little bit more of
your profile,
where I'm at in my life.
Yeah,
where my profile, like, you know, someone that's, you know, also in their 20s or maybe early 30s, and kind of facing that those challenges with their parent. And there's a lot of great kind of tips and tricks on kind of, you know, how to navigate. And then also finding support groups. I do an online support group with other young adult caregivers.
Yep.
My dad goes to an in-person support group with others in our town and community. And
that's
so it's
awesome.
Kind of finding people that are similar. And that's really what led me to 48 Peaks.
That is what I was hoping you would do.
Yeah.
And was it a 0 hour like, were you just sort of like, I need more in-person community, or I need to ally a hobby of mine or something that brings me peace with building community around support? Like, what was it? And was it sort of something you sought out, or did you find 48 Peaks, or did 48 Peaks find you?
Yeah, I would say the 0 hour is really taking that leap to kind of seek out a community or seek out doing the first kind of fundraising event. I actually, the first year I did a longest day fundraising, I ran a half marathon.
Wow.
And so I kind of took it upon myself to do the Facebook post of, hi, I'm fundraising to raise awareness for my mom and all those impacted by Alzheimer's. And that kind of pinpointed the moment of opening the doors. There were so many people that came out that, you know, reached out and said, oh my gosh, like your mom is incredible. People I hadn't heard from in years, people I went to school with that said maybe my, you know, my grandmother or my loved one is going through this. Really opened the door for me to share my experience. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, one, it helped me really process a lot what I was going through. I think there was a point where, and I think other families that, you know, have dementia or maybe it's a different type of disease, they really want to keep everything private. Mm-hmm. And as well, that's understandable. The moment that I kind of shared what was happening,
you
really
suddenly had community. Yeah.
To community, to education, and to support. And so that was definitely a moment. So I did that. And then decided that I really wanted to get involved in a little bit more hiking. I had done a few hikes here or there. I went to school out in Western Mass. And so there's, you know, the Berkshires and great hiking. But I do know that, you know, hiking is sometimes you need a little bit of knowledge and safety and things. Yes. I knew I wasn't, you know, super strong with. I wanted to find a community that I could tag along with and maybe learn these things along the way. And so that's really what led me to seek out 48 Peaks. I found a group that was hiking and they were wearing purple shirts.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, purple. I see this color all the time. It's the color of Alzheimer's.
Yep.
And really started reading a little bit more about the group and got involved with the volunteer committee, which helps kind of do some of the social media for it. They do organizing the teams and fundraising and really opened the door to kind of get that community support that I didn't know how impactful it would be.
Alana, how has this personal story affected you, your personal trajectory in life? So, like, my trajectory is, all right, I'm going to work, I'm going to get my kids into school, then I'm going to retire, and then I'm going to travel, right? Like, whatever that looks like. Did you have a plan? I'm sure we all have plans. And how has your plan changed, right? Because now you have this... Hey, life just threw you a curveball, right? You got to take care of this. Like, how has your mom's diagnosis changed your plan, your trajectory as a young person going about their way?
And to piggyback off of that, Alana, how has finding community as a result of that 0 hour allowed for you to perhaps see even more as you envision your future for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I if you asked me 10 years ago, if when I was 29 and I was, you know, changing diapers and picking up from daycare and tucking into bed, if I thought it would be my mom, I would have said no way. But completely changed the trajectory of kind of what my 20s looked like.
You're forced to grow up faster, right? Yeah.
But I also do credit my mom a lot with the strength and the lessons that my mom is an incredible person. She's a huge role model for me. And
sure.
And she lived her life, you know, in those years of her 20s as traveling, and she lived out in Hawaii for a few years. She did travel nurse, and she went over to Europe and,
wow.
And totally embraced being a social butterfly and just, you know, living her life and not trying to settle down too early.
Yeah.
And I think I always kind of had that sense of, you know, I'm not trying to settle down too early either. And I really want to embrace kind of having those experiences and getting to travel and do those things. And so, and my mom has always preached patience to me. I'm an only child,
yep.
I do think my mom tried her best to not let that only child syndrome impact me. And so there's a lot of strength that I found from caring for my mother. And
mm-hmm.
I've tried to really kind of embrace as I get older. I kind of see that I have taken on a lot of those qualities, and there's no doubt that my mom would be so proud of me and the things
Amazing.
That I
Love it.
Have done with the time that even moving home, I try and identify some of the good moments that I have. I, one, have been able to save a good amount of money, not renting, living in, you know, some city like a New York or Boston that might
yep.
have been a trajectory if said this not happened, saved a good amount of money. And I feel really proud and accomplished of that. I also think that with that, I've been able to travel and kind of do some of those things that my mom got to do. I followed in some of my mom's passions, and she's was an avid golfer. And so now I find myself in golf leagues and kind of, you know, feeling her energy when I'm out there and,
nice.
And doing those things too. And so I really think that, you know, maybe the trajectory of my life kind of shifted, but my mom was super influential. And even though I take care of her, I am really grateful for the time that I get with her. And those moments of, you know, this disease progresses in only one direction.
Yeah.
I really try and be grateful for those extra moments that I do get with her, even the hard ones. I know that sometimes that time's limited and, you know, as much as I would probably, if this trajectory was different and I was out, you know, living in some different city or doing a completely different career or something, I think that, you know, things have happened for a reason, and I'm trying to be positive and grateful for what the trajectory that I do have.
I totally believe that things happen for a reason. And something you mentioned when you described your mom is that in her 20s, she was very active, right? She was in Europe, and she was a social butterfly. The reference I'm going to haphazardly make is, I think there's a master plan, right? And I think we do things in the order that is natural, right? That's like how we do stuff. Like for me, yes, I traveled in my wilding years and so on and so forth. But, you know, I'm facing retirement in maybe 45 years from now. I'm kidding, like in 20 years, right? But my point is, I still have more to do, right? And I know your mom still has more to do as well. But what kind of struck me was, and I hope I'm making sense, is that it seems like she got a lot of the wilding years done earlier in her life, where I think I still have more wilding years to do, right? And I think we're just – people are just built differently. And then the second kind of thought I had was the people that surround your mom, your dad, I don't know if like there's cousins and grandkids and so on and so forth, but in today's age of video and pictures on your phone and doing all these things, like you can capture a lot more of those moments, right?
Sure.
And remember that person in the light into which you want to remember it, right? And then the final bit is, how's your dad, right? Like, this is the woman he has spent, I don't know how many years, 30 years with, 39 years yeah. with, right? Like, how is he, and how is your relationship with him because of this situation?
Yeah, I cannot say enough amazing things about how incredible my dad is and how much respect I have for him and how much he has dedicated into supporting my mom. He retired about 5 years ago, and he, although we are a team through and through when it comes to caregiving, and I'm really grateful because there is a large gap in caregiving support, you know, for others that are impacting this disease, and I
yep.
don't think me and my dad could do it without each other.
Yep.
And so I acknowledge so many people are doing it alone. But my dad truly is patient and kind and sacrifices a lot for my mom.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, strong, but I think we lean on each other a ton too. And, you know, there's times where, you know, sometimes the patience gets the best of you and it's, you know, you're on your last straw and it's kind of like, okay, tap out, let's hop in type
yep.
of thing.
Yeah.
And, it's been really important to have that. But my dad has also, he is also a social butterfly, and he has tried to talk with his community and his friends, because I think there is a little bit of a different experience when you're a husband or a spouse compared to a child. And so he's had, you know, his friends or people that he's talked to kind of ask him for his advice, or, you know, he's connected with some others and found his community. And I think that's been a really important aspect of caregiving, and truly he's so strong. So
that's amazing.
What's your dad's name? What are your mom and dad's names?
My dad is Chip and my mom is Vanessa.
Did you say Skip?
Chip.
Oh, Chip. Chip and Vanessa. Wait, Chip and Vanessa are also the hosts of some, like, reality show, aren't they?
I don't know. That's Chip and with the house show, right?
Yes.
I don't remember. I do know.
That's Chip awesome. And Vanessa. Okay.
Shout out to Chip and Vanessa.
What up?
Woohoo.
So, really grateful and feeling really blessed that that's the community that I go through this journey with, because I do know that, you know, there's so many people that experience this and have a very different relationship or family structure or support structure. And I think that's also what bringing everyone together by the, you know, the 48 Peaks hiking or doing different support groups really kind of helps you understand and share your story, because, like I said before, not everyone that's going through this disease will present their symptoms similar.
Sure.
But not everyone going through this disease as a caregiver will have the same level of knowledge or support or you know, resources available to them.
You know, I'm going to ask a question that might sound really silly. You say the disease, right? Like, I think of cancer as a disease, right? I think of, like, alcoholism as a disease. Is it like a disease by definition? Like, cancer is the biggest fucking disease that needs,
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Is it a, like, mental illness is a disease, right? But can't diseases be cured? Like, why isn't there a cure?
Well, cancer doesn't really have a cure.
Why? And why doesn't Alzheimer's have a cure? Like, why? We're doing AI. We're fake people. There's robots running the show, and we can't find a cure for this stuff? Come on.
Well, I think they've been trying for a really long time, Mark.
Keep fucking trying.
that's why we're supporting organizations like the Alzheimer's Association and 48 Peaks. Okay.
Hang on. I get kind of annoyed sometimes when we have these conditions that are affecting so many people, yet we can't find a cure. Like, how can you not? Do we have all this technology and doctors and everything?
Yes.
But why can't we find a cure? Me being a little, you know, whatever.
No,
passionate.
I hear you. That is the hope and the mission and the end game. Is to have survivors of this disease, is to have, you know, a future where, I love this quote, but a future where, like, Alzheimer's is just a memory. Like, you know, a disease of the past is kind of the ultimate goal and desire.
That's something I think we really do need to aspire towards. I mean, I know that it's, I'm with you. I was going to say that I had sent you a bunch of questions, Alana, and we haven't gotten to any of them. And the one thing I would love before we say goodbye is, how do we get involved? Like, Mark and I are hikers, right? How do we decide how do we get involved in supporting the Alzheimer's Association, 48 Peaks? Do you have to go to New Hampshire, or, you know, like, how do we do our part to support the Longest Day fundraising? And as just individuals who don't necessarily have very close family members going through this at the moment, can we still be helpful and supportive, and how do we do that?
Yeah, what I love about this community and this organization is that it is really accessible. There's not a fundraising threshold, and there's also not an ability threshold. If you a 4,000 footer is definitely, if you're hiking, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know, smaller, you know, peaks or mountains. We've had many people do, there's 52 with a view in New Hampshire. There's people that do some of the smaller hikes in Western Mass.
Okay.
If there's hikes that are local, you can absolutely create a team and get out there. You don't have to do it on a specific day. You can pick any day over the summer and get a team and get out there. To learn about it, the best resource is our alzheimers.org/48peaks.
Okay.
And there's tons of information on how to get set up. If you're interested and you have questions, you can absolutely shoot us a message on social media or Facebook. Again, Alzheimer's 48 Peaks, you can find us.
Okay.
And it's really accessible. It's really kind of a create your own challenge. If there's also sponsorship opportunities, if you're a business and you want to have your name on a sign that's posted up top of peak, we do a sponsor of summit.
Nice.
Access, and so kind of, you know, different partnerships. We've had you know, different breweries that, you know, are great to go to after a long day of hiking, and they have been part of our organization and events, and there's a lot of ways to get involved if hiking isn't your cup of tea. There's the Alzheimer's Walk. That's really great. There's a bike ride. There's running. My hope is to maybe do that marathon one day with
them.
So there's a ton of different ways you can really create your own event to get involved in the longest day. But the hiking community has been so welcoming as me being a newbie.
Yeah.
I've kind of just wanted to tag along on a few hikes the last few years, and this is the first year that I've created my own team. But it's really accessible, and everyone's super kind and welcoming and knowledgeable, and happy to have anyone join and tag along.
Thank you, Alana, so much for sharing your story and for all that you do to support the organization and to share information with us about 48 Peaks.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. It was great getting to be here.
Thank you, Alana. All right.
Take care.
All right, y'all. That was Alana, 48 Peaks. This is the Zero Hour. We are Audi 5000. Peace, y'all.
Peace.